Vidyashrishtha Varashama
Tasya Paramasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam Atapum Bir Dujashrishtha Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam Atapum Bir Dvijashreshtha Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam. Atapum Bir Dvijashreshtha Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam. Atapum Bir Dvijashreshtha Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam. Atapum Bir Dvijashreshtha Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam. Atapum Bir Dvijashreshtha Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sansiddhir Haritoshanam. Ataha, so, Bumbhi, by the human being. Dvijashreshtaha, O best among the twice born. Varna Ashrama, the institution of four castes and four orders of life. Vibhagashaha, by the division of. Svanustitasya, of one's own prescribed duties. Dharmasya, occupational. Sansiddhi, the highest perfection. Hari, the personality of Godhead. Doshanam, pleasing. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. Maybe ask them not to do that. Maybe you can tell them in Hindi. It makes that fountain sticky. Purport. Human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. The four castes are the intelligent caste, the martial caste, the productive caste, and the laborer caste. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualifications, and not by birth. Then again, there are four orders of life, namely the student life, householder's life, retired, and devotional life. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life. Otherwise, no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each and every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim, Hare Krishna, must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of varnashram dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. The varnashram institution is constructed to enable one to realize the absolute truth. It is not for artificial domination of one division over another. When the aim of life, who's that? Same guys? Our friends. When the aim of life, realization of the absolute truth, is missed by too much attachment for indriya priti, or sense gratification, as already discussed herein before, the institution of the varnashram is utilized by selfish men to pose an artificial predominance over the weaker section. In the Kali Yuga, or in the age of quarrel, this artificial predominance is already current. But the saner section of the people know it well, that the divisions of castes and orders of life are meant for smooth social intercourse and high-thinking self-realization, and not for any other purpose. Herein the statement of Bhagavatam is that the highest aim of life, or the highest perfection of the institution of the varnashram dharma, is to cooperate jointly for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. That is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Shrayam Rupakata Mahyam Dadhati Shapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Jatapadakamadam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Shagrajatam, Shahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam, Shadaitam Shavadhutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padan, Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karana Sindha Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vansha Kulpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vash Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Ata Pumbhir Drija Shreshta Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Svanustitasya Dharmasya Sangsiddhir Haritoshana. So here we encounter the notorious caste system. Any other commentator might have buried it, dismissed it as being something pertaining to the ancient days and no longer relevant, so as not to put off modern readers. But Srila Prabhupada, rather than bury it, brings it to the forefront. Similarly, with the Vedic cosmology, anyone else might have just minimized it and or tried to make it consistent with modern views. Prabhupada brings it to the forefront and puts it in their face, as it were. Similarly, with evolution and many other topics where someone else might have compromised and tried to make it something acceptable to modern sensibilities, Prabhupada just puts it on the table and says, here it is, it's right.
Gender refusals.
Gender issues. Prabhupada even enjoyed bringing it to the forefront and challenging the prevailing views. So Prabhupada says that human society all over the world is divided this way. Chaturvarnam Maya Shrishtam. Krishna says, this system's all over the world because it's created by me. Prabhupada pointed out that in the former Soviet Union, where their avowed aim was to have a classless society, still someone was teaching in the university, someone was sweeping the streets, someone was running the government. It didn't all become homogeneous. Naturally, the world will divide into different classes. America, for all of its egalitarianism, is highly class-conscious, admitted or not. And there are societies of scientists, societies of professors, societies of wealthy men, societies, different kinds of social strata in which outsiders are not welcome, where they're recognized for what they are, members of other, generally lower groups. So Krishna says this system is everywhere, but guna karma vibhagasha, the four occupational divisions, Prabhupada says the intelligent caste, martial caste, productive caste, and laborer caste. Caste, of course, is a bad word, but it's there. Someone is, not everyone is going to the university. Among those who are going to the universities, not all are going to real universities. Some are going to essentially glorified technical schools. And among even those who are going to the higher schools, very few actually take up the occupation of intellectuals or take up intellectual or theological or pastoral life because they don't have the qualifications. They don't have the patience to sit there and read books, and study, and speak about philosophy or other intellectual topics. That requires that one be a member of the most intelligent group of society. Down from that, there's military people. The intellectuals don't want to be military men. Military men may not be intellectuals, although there are very intelligent people in the military, but they are not those who are dedicated, generally speaking, to the highest pursuits of spiritual inquiry and spiritual, of a peaceful and reflective way of life, because that's not what military life or political life is about. That requires other capabilities. And the Vaishyas, they're still to be seen, those who are very much into business and wheeling dealing, The farmers are hardly seen these days. They're becoming almost extinct, although they're the very important section of society. Laborers are to be found everywhere, but even a good Shudra is rarely found these days. As they say, it's hard to find good help. Because the Shudras are not willing to act in the natural mood of a Shudra. But you can, as much as society protests against these things, you can still, it became popularly, the American public became familiar with it in a palatable form in the literature of J.R.R. Tolkien and the subsequent film versions, where you have essentially a Vaishya who goes on his somehow he's goes on this great quest and comes in touch with kings and with a wizard who has intellectual or he's a visionary. The visionary is there, the kings are there, the simple farmer is there, and one of the sub-heroes is a simple gardener whose greatest qualification is his devotion to his master, and who's not the brightest guy, doesn't speak good English, isn't the sharpest intellect, but is extremely faithful and devoted and good-hearted and willing to do anything. But he's like a perfect Shudra. The perfect Shudra is one of the heroes of the piece. Such a good person. Not that a Shudra is bad. Shudra, a good Shudra, is a very valuable member of human society, just as the legs are a very valuable part of the body. They're not the head, they're not the arms, but we wouldn't want to lose them. So even the legs have their valuable contribution to make. The laborer section have their valuable contribution. And every section has its valuable contribution. Productive section is needed for the prosperity of human society, especially in regard to the natural, real and natural needs of human society. The martial section is needed for good government. Without good government, people suffer. And without vision, you don't have anything. The headless body is like a corpse. And the unfortunate situation, Prabhupada mentions, the castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification, and not by birth. In India, the system is perverted. It's taken to be by birth. And in the rest of the world, it may sometimes be by birth or simply by artificial credentials. One is not actually qualified, but one assumes the occupation of one of these sections, regardless of being unqualified. Particularly, it's apparent in the political section, where people who are worse than Sudras take the role of chief executive and simply loot the people instead of being responsible. The kings were called Naradeva. They were supposed to be very godly. But in Kali Yuga, the kings become degraded sense gratifiers, and therefore they're deposed and they're replaced by elected sense gratifiers. I've told this many times. I was on a train one time in India, and the fellow near me happened to be a Saudi. He was on business in India, and we got to talking. Nice fellow. And it happened to be an American election year, So he said, you know, our system of government is better than your sister system of government. Every year, you go through so much trouble, you make all this publicity, you spend so much money just to elect another thief. He said, in our country, we just keep the same thief. So it's a fact. Dasyu prayeshu rajasu. In the Kali Yuga, the kings are practically thieves instead of being the responsible people. And there are no proper Brahmins to guide them. The intelligent people are mostly misdirected into serving industry and the military through technical skills. So you get a person who's very bright, extremely bright, and ought to be engaged in true intellectual work, and instead he's working for the military, making something exceedingly destructive, or he's working for industry, making something exceedingly useless, or he's working for in marketing, figuring out how to enter someone's brain and twist and turn and pull and push and somehow or other press those motivation buttons so that somebody will spend money. And they've got it down to a highly refined and nasty science. And in this way, people are using their graduate degrees and their high intellectual capabilities. And of course, they do whatever their masters tell them because they're paid men. They're, in essence, shudras. They're employees, not independent thinkers. So Brahman, real Brahman, never depends on anyone for his livelihood. He remains independent. Prabhupada gives the example of Chanakya, who, although serving as the prime minister, lived in a hut and never accepted any salary. And when his king, Chandragupta, once questioned his advice, that's it, I'm gone. I'm gone. And to the downfall of the empire, if I have my history straight, without Chanakya, the king was lost. The Chanakya couldn't be bought. Even Prabhupada, when he was asked by Dr. Bose to work in his chemical laboratory, Prabhupada didn't want to, because he didn't want to become an employee. He didn't want to become anyone's employee. And he only agreed because Dr. Bose said, no, it's not like you're my employee, it's like you're my son. That was, on that relationship, Prabhupada accepted the position. But otherwise, he was reluctant. So the employee status, even the productive class, they're not employees. They're self-independent. They care for some cows. They take care of the land. And they're independent in that way. They're dependent on Krishna, but not on the mercy of others. And only the fourth section are the employees. Without someone to take care of them, they're lost. So these sections are supposed to be by qualification, but kalo shudra sambhava. In Kali Yuga, everyone is born a shudra, and hardly anyone is trained in higher qualities. But these sections are to be revived and properly trained, and Prabhupada emphasized that as one of the aspects, important aspects of his mission. Prabhupada says, then again, there are four orders of life: student, householder, retired, and devotional. This is perhaps more easily understandable by people today. There's generally a student life. Everyone is a student for some time. the people are encouraged to complete their education at least through high school, and the more intelligent to attend the university. So it's natural that student life will be there from, say, up to the age of 20 or 25. But unfortunately, in the modern education, little attention is given to development of character, which is the main focus of attention in the Vedic system of student life. The students are to be trained to control the mind, control the senses, to develop the God consciousness, spiritual understanding, to develop moral principles, and to know how the difference between what is one's duty and what is not one's duty. In other words, how to be a cultured and civilized human being, eligible for making spiritual advancement. This is, it's even recognized by some in the present day that our educational system fails in training the students in culture, in the culture of self-control, in the culture of, in what they call values. You know, they're talking values-based education, values. But they're essentially a failure in developing values. The students are mostly, the men are womanizers and the women are prostitutes. They think that they're making advancement so naively and foolishly, putting the men and women, dumping all these passionate young men and women together in a park for 4 years, and expecting them to become, to be focused on their studies. And they know that that's not what they're focused on. Even some professor was talking about it. Some article I saw, he said, you know, the difficulty of, or the strangeness of standing in front of a classroom of young men and women with, and trying to speak about some topic while all these hormones are, like just filling the room. So, practically speaking, it's understood that after 4 years of college, and what to speak of high school, they'll have learned all bad habits, all nasty things. I could give some examples, but anyway, we don't need to do it. Yeah, I will. According to, there was the most recent professional survey done by sociologists in sexuality, is something called the SEICUS report, SEICUS. It was commissioned by Congress, then Reverend Jesse Jackson scuttled it, and the private sector took it over and completed the survey, although on a somewhat smaller scale. And they inquired about, you know, this and that and this and that and this and that. One of the items, actually the most delicate item they found, the thing that was hardest to get people to respond to and for which they had to have the most careful protocols to check the accuracy of their results, in which even the sponsors were, you know, a little squeamish about, was masturbation. And anyway, they had it in the study. They didn't find out all that much. Pretty much, there were, you know, norms, the usual numbers. The only thing that they found out that was a significant trend was that the incidence of masturbation increased in proportion to the number of years of education one had. All the way from junior high school, to college, to postgraduate. At every level, the more years of education, the higher the incidence. All glories to education. Interesting statistic, huh? Anyway, it's one sample.
Well,
in education they would be doing in the road, so to speak. In other words, they're educated, so they're frustrated because so.
Well, we could speculate about exactly how it's, but the idea that the people who did the analysis, the authors of the report, their suggestion was that in college or in the educational sector, one gradually acquired a kind of broad-mindedness, that, you know, everything should be tried, everything should be, you know, why not? Just as now we have, you know, homosexuality. And maybe the people who are still down on it are kind of the rednecks and the gross uneducated people. And anybody who's, you know, been through a proper education understands that it's only, you know, a preference or a choice, or more, those who really understand know that it's wired in and this is just, you know, who these people are, and that there's no reason to be have any prejudices about their orientation. Whereas previously we thought that it was just degradation and abomination. Now we know that is just another way of doing things. So if one gentleman is lying with another gentleman, inserting his member into the other gentleman's behind, that's just, you know, another orientation, another preference, another way of approaching life. So the more one becomes educated, the more one becomes attuned to these higher understandings. Yes?
I can't remember if I was telling you, but I was telling somebody this in the last day or two. My daughter, who's now in high school, I was telling you, mm-hmm. She said that, you know, through junior high, people sort of looked down on gays and lesbians. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they knew they were there, but they sort of looked down on them, you know. And gradually, you know, as they got up to eighth grade, they started accepting, well, it's okay. But in high school, she said, now, she's one of the most, you know, one of the top-notch high schools in California. Now it is, you know, something not only respectable, but something desirable. And those who are gays and lesbians are like admired, and it's like something that everyone should try to get into. You know, it's incredible.
Prestigious. Yeah,
I'm just wondering what's going to happen when she reaches college. You know, it'll be like when we were in college, if you didn't drink some beer, you were just.
Well, I can tell you, because one time I was on the campus here at Berkeley, in fact, at the beginning of the semester, I was just walking, taking a morning walk on the campus, and I happened to pick up one of those orientation booklets published for incoming students, for freshmen. And there in the booklet was a two pages, warning one about cults and people who were too friendly and, you know, that whole thing, and how to watch out for cults. And then there was a two-page spread about the gay scene. And in essence it was, well, here it is, and if you like, you can try it on and see if it fits. And, you know, here's where the gay bars are, and here's kind of how you get to meet people there, and, you know, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, here's step four. So, you know, people are spending like $40,000 a year to send their kid to the University of California at Berkeley to become queer. So this is one of the benefits of modern education. One can learn all of these finer values and more subtle understandings of what human life is about. So the idea of student life has changed significantly since Vedic times. In Vedic times, they were taught, especially Brahmacharya, how to control sex desire, how to control the mind, how to understand that the goal of life is not sense gratification, and that sense gratification doesn't bring happiness, but rather unrestricted sense gratification brings trouble, entanglement. That's now a weird idea, a foreign value, there's a sort of an artificial idea that there really one should exercise restraint. But the restraint is arbitrary because those who are teaching it are themselves unrestrained in so many ways. So the things that are really, really bad, you know, that destroy your life, maybe you should be, well, you should be careful about them. You know, if you're going to have illicit sex, you should do it responsibly. Safely and responsibly. If you're drinking, you should drink responsibly and with moderation. If you're, you know, in this way, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, illicit sex should all be done with responsibility and maturity. This is the advancement of human life. Whereas in the Vedic culture, they were taught actually what self-restraint is and what the purpose of it is, that it's not just self-abnegation without any higher purpose, but that the entire human life is meant for spiritual realization. What's the use of self-abnegation if the purpose of life is essentially sense gratification? You know, why are we waiting? If the business of life is to make a lot of money and gratify my senses, then why should I restrain myself now? I might as well become mature, because the mature people smoke, drink, chase women, and do all these other things. You know, why are you stopping us? Why shouldn't we? And of course, they have a point there. So the Vedic culture starts with teachers who themselves are pure in their way of life and who can properly instruct the students so that they really become people of culture, so that should they go on to householder life, they become responsible, spiritually progressive householders who later can retire and finally dedicate themselves fully to devotional life. The idea of householder life is there in modern society, although it's become pretty tawdry with people marrying and coupling and uncoupling and coupling and uncoupling. So even marriage has become a farce. And retirement is a sad time of life. When people have saved for their leisure years, their golden years, but they suffer like dogs from so many diseases and so many troubles. And they have no high pursuit. In those retired years, they go and live on an extended golf course, and they play canasta or whatever, and meet with their friends. But they have no idea of a higher purpose in life, and the idea of renunciation is just not in the picture at all. So this has to be. So the Vedic culture is way ahead here. It gives a purpose to life from the very beginning and a system so that things make sense, so that student life is meant for training, householder life has its place, retirement has its goal, has its meaning. And finally, there's full detachment and devotional life for going back to Godhead, which is the real purpose. So all of these divisions should be there, and the point given in this verse is that in each division, the purpose is to satisfy the personality of Godhead. All of the divisions now are disconnected. The laborer is just working for his sense gratification. The businessman is working for his sense gratification. The politician or military man is working for sense gratification. And the so-called intellectual has become a servant of the other three sections. So he implies his intelligence for promoting and pursuing sense gratification. The student life is a life of sense gratification. Householder life is seen as being a vehicle for sense gratification. When the sense gratification diminishes, then you reconfigure it and try again. Retired life is also seen as a time for sense gratification. And very sadly, the people want to extend their sex life way into retirement. There was some statistical survey about that also. It was published a few years ago. I saw the item in the student newspaper of the University of Florida. And even the editor's comment was, yuck, you know, thinking of grandma and grandpa doing that. You know, it's just, it's so gross in their estimation. But grandma and grandpa don't have any higher goal. So they're desperately clinging to that, even when there's no taste in it. What is that? In Hamlet, the fire and the blood is now cooled. You know, you're too old for this kind of thing, he told his mother, but you know, still you're stuck on it. So, very unfortunately, people who should be retiring and devoting their life for spiritual advancement are still pursuing the business of the householders, and even that beyond what the householders legitimately can do. And you know, with, if you read the, there's Viagra, then there are the alternatives to Viagra. There are little devices with pumps and so on, and there's so many different kinds of ways that they're trying to extend virility into old age, and you know, desperately trying to get sense gratification, even when sense gratification is just biologically, you know, not part of the picture. People, the modern civilization is out of sync with biology even. You know, they want to enjoy what the body can enjoy in youth when they're in old age. And they have no, because they have no idea that there's anything else to do in old age except try to do what you could do when you were young. It's very sad, very pathetic. No idea of what they're doing. And then they just finally deteriorate and they're shelved away in old age homes and they die without understanding that this system, and without understanding the purpose of the system or the purpose of life, the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada said that half of his mission was to teach this, to institute this system for social orders and for spiritual orders. So that we're to do in our own lives and in the larger circle. Okay, any questions, comments? Yes?
Just another point. You were saying how the students say, well, you know, why not? I was thinking, so the gays the same way, you know, they say the same way, you know.
Why not?
And you're doing it without purpose of having children, so why should
I? Why not? And they're, you know, if taking sense gratification as being the goal of life, why not? You know, why not gay, why not lesbian, why not pedophile, why not necrophiliac, why not, you know, what's wrong with bestiality?
What was the last one?
Bestiality.
Oh.
You know, given that the purpose of life is sense gratification, you can pretty much answer anything with why not. The only reason maybe why not is if it seems not to work. You know, if you don't get off on it, well, that's a good reason why not. Otherwise, You know, well, if it works for you, or just because it doesn't work for you doesn't mean it doesn't work for someone else. You know, why not? The why not culture. That was, in fact, reported to be the last words of Dr. Timothy Leary, the prophet of LSD, the great prophet who misled, essentially, an entire generation. And he asked, why? And then, why not? Very fitting last words. Why not? Prabhittim cha nivrittim cha janana vidurasu. Nashocham napi cha chodo nasatyam teshu. They don't know what's to be done, what's not to be done, the idea of duty, because they don't know that there's a personality of Godhead, that we have a relationship with Him, that there's a way to act in such a way as to please Him, that that's our real business in life. That they don't know. Just why not? All right.
Maharsh, you've given a rather scathing critique of contemporary society and its perversion of the notion. But we see, if we look, you know, if we turn the pointer towards the ISKCON society and its now 30-year history, we see rampant failure. Total across the board failure of any attempt to create a connection. So how would you counter that?
ISKCON's not so hot. Yeah, ISKCON has not been able to implement Varnashram. Or even, you know, you look at it, the student life is not very good. The gurukulas have largely been abandoned and replaced with sort of karmi standard education.
If they have that at all.
If they have that at all. Householder life is pretty bad with, you know, people, affairs and divorces and, you know, abandonments.
Quite a bit higher divorce rate than the karmis.
I don't know if it's higher, but it's certainly not conspicuously lower. The retirement, we're hardly seeing. People don't seem to be rushing toward retirement. Rarely people who are eligible for retirement in terms of the Varnashram system don't seem to be rushing toward retirement. Rather, we see that people in their 40s and 50s are kind of looking for the next matrimonial opportunity. And sannyas has not fared all that well either. So, ISKCON doesn't have an enviable record or is not setting a sterling example by any means. Unfortunately, yes. We?
Yeah.
Well, we are not going to do anything about that in terms of, you know, ISKCON. We are going to try to do our own duty as a brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. We at least could try to follow our own duty. What we, the government, are going to do is up to they, the government.
I mean, I know that everything's in Shankar.
There are sadhus outside of ISKCON. It might sometimes be advantageous to take advantage of their association. It might sometimes not be. Anyway, I'm not going to
get into that.
Hmm?
Get into that.
Right, I'm not going to get into that.
But there are some sadhus in ISKCON, and we're fortunate to be able to take advantage of their association sometimes.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, and there's some sadhus in ISKCON that are very good to associate with, and there are probably some sadhus in ISKCON that are not so good to associate with. So, inside and outside, both things are there. How about that? Anything else?
My question also was concerning Vanathali. Vanashram, you know, the famous Vanashram cult, there was, there, you know, well, we had these communities, and there was a big conversation and brouhaha about, you know, what it means to recreate Vanashram within ISKCON, and that doesn't seem to have gone very far, right?
True. Anyway, let them discuss.
Well, I mean, like as you've gone through the four orders anyway, the caste system. And
it starts with proper education of the students, actually. And for those who are our age, it advances toward retirement. Because if the senior people don't retire, number one, they hog the positions that the junior people ought to be taking up. They not only prevent the juniors from taking it up, but they clog things because they're old fossils who no longer have bright ideas. So they just keep everything stagnant. And they set a crummy example for the next generation. Basically, next generation is, well, you know, my dad hung on to, you know, material life till the end. My mom hung on to material life till the end. So, you know, where's the example for me? In India, still you see people retiring to holy places and, you know, taking up, you know, really putting things aside for spiritual advancement. So many people came on our padyatra, you know, whole time, because they, you know, they finish their family life, and that's what you do. You'll see older ladies at home, and they're doing bhajan, they're doing puja, or they people go to holy places and do that. So there's still this sense that the old age is meant for retirement and detachment. So you know, leaving aside what students should do and householders should do, we're looking at our own generation getting pretty ripe for retiring, just demographically speaking. So it that ashram could use some attention, Vanaprastha ashram. That's worth cultivating. That's a whole course in itself. I can't do it today, but there's a good ashram. There's lots in it, lots of, like, new hope. It's the new hope ashram, Vanaprastha ashram. So spread the word among, you know, our guys. Yes?
I can understand why Vanaprastha ashram would be a good thing to preach, because when you get older, there's no, you don't have any chance for sense gratification anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, why do something that's no fun anyway, that the body's not going to let you do anyway, that looks pathetic to anybody, you know, younger than you are, that makes you like a sad old dog trying to, you know, lap up a few scraps from a dead body. You know, when there's so many wonderful opportunities actually available. People are starving especially in ISKCON, the younger people are actually starving for older devotees who associated with Prabhupada or who, you know, had all this experience in Krishna consciousness, or including those who've had, you know, lots of material experience, and they, you know, they kind of know what's what in the world, and they can give good spiritual perspectives on things. And if those people with all that potential just spend their older years getting older where they are and sinking instead of rising, it's sad. So we shouldn't grab the opportunity. Spread the word. Shall we stop here? Okay. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.